afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it downloaded on your phone, you should do it immediately because you'll get to see us host the show live on video, not just audio, wherever it is you go. It happened again. Another pot shop burglary. Is this one any different than all the others? Does it end any differently? Well, let's find out because it's what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
We get these stories all the time. It's almost always a pot shop. Every once in a while, you'll hear about some gas station or retail shop getting hit. But it's pretty much the same thing each and every time where almost always a stolen Kia or Hyundai end up getting used, backed into the storefront of a pot shop. A bunch of people get out. They steal everything they can because this is really easy to sell on the streets. You make good money. You're out before the cops might even get a 911 call reporting the burglary. It doesn't take long. And obviously, the more people you have, the faster you can just clean out an entire shop. And in this case, they went after a Central District pot shop called Forbidden Cannabis Club. It's not forbidden. It turns out you can show up and buy weed.
It's a very confusing name.
It kind of is. Maybe they just did this out of anger. You're like, forbidden, I'll show you. They stole thousands of dollars worth of merchandise, not just weed. It sounds like also vape, cigarettes, bongs. Do people steal bongs? I feel like that would be dangerous to steal because I feel like it would just break. Because you're just pushing everything into a big bag, usually. It happened just before 3:30 a.m. This is the part that's a little bit different. A group of more than 10 people were involved in this. Over 10 people showed up. And Fox 13 says, because I'm looking at the video, I concur. It looks like a mixture of young adults, kids. Like some of these, they look really young just based on how tall they are. And it's boys and it's girls. So it was a group effort. And this is at 3:30, understand. So you're talking about like some 13-year-old. I bet you the youngest is 12. I bet you once they make an arrest, they're going to tell us that the youngest is 12. Was it a Hyundai or a Kia? It's 50-50.
I'm going to go Kia.
No, this time it was a Hyundai.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a Hyundai Sonata. Broke into the front doors of this business. The security footage obviously caught everything that happened. While the driver wedged the stolen car between the building's front doors and the bike stands near the sidewalk, a large group of suspects ended up going into the building, according to Fox 13. They say after multiple attempts to break the doors down, the suspects eventually gain entry, swarming the store, stealing thousands of dollars worth of products. Plus, on top of that, they ended up stealing some cash. They ended up fleeing in two cars. We see this happen a lot. So no matter how many people that went in, there's almost always one or two getaway drivers outside that you can't see on the surveillance footage normally. They were able to capture at least some of it. They drove off. The owner, and again, keep this in mind. What I'm about to tell you is not a repeat. We have not covered this story before. This is a new story. The owner says this is particularly frustrating because a similar incident happened just days ago. Just days ago, April 5th. Now, the only lucky part there is that that break-in was unsuccessful. And unfortunately, despite having to hire extra security, in this case, you didn't have the extra security around. Because this is overnight. They say the owner believes the suspects likely cased the business and knew exactly when to execute this particular burglary. The store manager, Austin Bren, spoke with Fox 13.
It's pretty disheartening. We put a lot of time and energy and effort into making this an operating business. I mean, cannabis has never killed anybody. Cannabis has never...
Well, that's not entirely true. It's an aggravating factor, we'll say. I don't think there has been a fatal overdose of marijuana. Technically, that's possible. Usually, you don't get to that point because you kind of lose motivation after that fourth puff, I think. That's what. Not that I know. Don't give me that. I don't smoke weed.
Never hurt anybody. There are people that are
it's hurtful.
Lifelong patients of over-the-counter medications that use this and it changes their lives. We just want the same opportunities as other businesses, whether that be our ability to get proper insurance, our ability to protect our business. We are so limited because of the federal government's rules and regulations on cannabis that it's still a scheduled drug, that we don't have as many avenues as other businesses do. So we work with what we can.
And that latter point is actually an important one. It's often not had when talking about this, but he's absolutely right. At some point, whether or not you agree with legalizing weed doesn't matter when it comes to the safety of a community, because unless it's zoned not to have a pot shop, it's in your best interest to make sure that they are legally allowed to do what they need to in order to keep that business from being so vulnerable to crooks. Now, all businesses in Seattle and Washington right now are vulnerable, but they are more vulnerable when you're not allowed to deal with a bank, which means you have to handle cash, a lot of cash. And not everyone, of course, keeps it on the premises, but there's lots of break-ins that also happen, break-ins, robberies that happen when they're open. On top of that, the insurance aspect to this is an important one. What kind of protections you have in a general sense, I think all of that matters, and we don't have that conversation. So I would argue, regardless of where you stand, this is one of those issues that it makes more sense, at least from a federal level, to just either embrace or say once and for all, this is a national issue and you're going to either ban or support it. Because almost all states now have legalized weed. Not all of them, almost all, in some capacity. So we're there. We're there. If you're on the opposite side of this, you lost this battle. You can participate and mitigate the rules around it. You can help make it safer, but you're not going to get back to criminalizing weed. It will not happen, period. End of story. So we better get at the table and figure this out. Because what you don't want to have happen in your neighborhood is a pot shop robbery, because that's going to beget another robbery, and it's not going to be a pot shop. It's going to be the Chinese food restaurant across the street or the corner store around the block. This stuff spreads. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
Fox 13 says the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs sent a letter to former Chief of Police of Republic, Lauren Culp. He's now a cop again. We'll get into that in a second. But they say they might expel his membership from the group because of a number of not just unprofessional social media posts in which he refers to Jacqueline Maycumber as a quote-unquote female dog. We covered this at the time. It's disgusting. This guy is toxic. We should have nothing else to do with him. Talk about someone who just went unhinged the second he stopped getting any kind of press or attention. I honestly feel bad for him as well. He legitimately thought he was going to win. We knew he was not going to win. There was no chance in the world that he was going to win and be our next governor. Sorry, that is the unfortunate reality. And it's not through a lack of trying. He was on this show multiple times. He was on and embraced by conservative media, overwhelming support. And we still weren't able to win because we all knew he was a little bit too extreme for Washington State. Doesn't mean he's extreme. It means he's extreme for Washington State. But he has since just gone overboard. And he has a small but very vocal group of fans who, they're not all on the East Side, but a lot of them appear to be because that's where he's based, that just rip into anyone who doesn't say and do 100% of what they want. They're acting like the progressives, the radical leftists that we call out on the show every single day. Because even I'm a rhino to these people. It's like, my God, what do you need from me to convince you that I'm a conservative? Because the radical leftists think I'm a white supremacist. I'm a Jew and I'm gay, but I'm a Nazi, apparently. It's like, I know they've diversified because of DE&I. I probably didn't go that far, is my guess. But you can't be so stringent. And he's just causing chaos, I think, to cause chaos. And so Ozzie Knezevich, who's no longer a sheriff, but he is the former president of this particular group, he said, this is so far out of line. It's unfathomable. that somebody of his stature would say something like that. And he's not stopping. He's tripling down. He's quadrupling down. Again, he's doing this because he likes the attention. He is the worst kind of internet troll, I'm sorry to say. He could have been a positive voice in the party, in the movement. He could have contributed to the Washington State Republicans or any individual campaign. But now, I know he thinks he's doing some favor to Semi Byrd. You're making Semi Byrd seem even less electable. It's true. Because you are going to be defined by some of the company you keep or the people who might support you and the way that they support you if you're silent through all of this. And I haven't seen Semi Byrd say anything. And if he said something, I apologize. I missed it, but I haven't seen it. I can't stand where he's going, Lauren Culp. They say the retired four-time elected Republican sheriff of Spokane County says it's rare for Waspik to send a letter of this kind unless it's quote-unquote very warranted. But he says this has been a long time coming. If you're not going to wear the badge with honor and pride and represent the profession with the dignity that you should, then Culp should be removed from the association. Kind of agree. I kind of agree. He's become a joke. He's become toxic. And he doesn't do any favors to law enforcement. He's who people will point to on the radical left to say this is why they hate cops. And I don't know if I would trust him as a deputy at this point. I really don't. Based on some of these tweets, he's held back a little bit in attacking me. Every once in a while he will, but I do remember him tweeting, well, he was fair to me when I was on. It's like, yeah, I was. And so maybe you all should pay a little bit more attention when someone like me, who's absolutely fair to you, says you're acting inappropriately. I don't know why anyone would stand up for someone who's very clearly a troll. But we have Bob Songer, who's the Klickitat County Sheriff. He's one of the quote-unquote constitutional sheriffs, which is code that the media uses to say he's crazy. That's basically the code that they use, which is how they talk about him all the time. But he says Culp has First Amendment rights and that he has no problem with Culp's tweets as long as it's not breaking the law. He's obviously right. There's nothing he's doing that's illegal, but it's unbecoming a law enforcement official. The same way it would be unbecoming of a politician. The same way it would be unbecoming of literally any other profession other than professional internet troll or arguably talk show host. But I don't talk like that the way he does. I definitely don't. He has First Amendment rights, which is why we're not talking about jailing him or punishing him, legally speaking. He can do this all he wants. And the group can say, yeah, we don't want to be associated with you. You don't have a right to be in our group just because you have a badge. You're bad for us. I think they're 100% on the right on this one. And, you know, again, I don't often criticize cops, almost never criticize law enforcement unless they really, really, really deserve it. Because frankly, they're getting all of that flack from everywhere else when they don't do anything wrong. So I'm not going to do that generally. This deserves it. Am I crazy on this one?
I think
I know it's going to upset some people, but would you rather
lie? You're more attacking him as a public figure than a cop anyway.
I'm not saying he's a bad cop, but I am saying he would make me question whether or not he's a good one based on how he's performing online. Now, I'm not saying he's not a great cop. He might put all of that aside. He might put literally all of it aside, and he really can compartmentalize the online personality versus Lauren Culp deputy with the sheriff's office. It's still unbecoming. It's just still not a good look. And he can complain all he wants that he posted a video or a photo with tape on his mouth and it said Seattle media something or other. Like he thinks Seattle media, because conservatives in Seattle media are calling him out. And also, all of a sudden, we're all rhinos. Before, when he wanted to come on our shows or get printed in newspaper, whatever it is, perfect conservative warriors fighting for what's right. But now that we criticize behavior that should be criticized, frankly, we're all rhinos. He hasn't called me a rhino, I don't think.
That's another overused term that I want a moratorium on.
Stop. Please stop with the rhino stuff. If you want to go after someone who's like 50-50, okay, fine. I get it, I guess. However, think of it this way. This is not always the context, but oftentimes it is. You have someone who votes with you 80% of the time or 0% of the time. So tell me which is better. If you want the 0% of the time because you're that strict with your world views, okay, I respect that. I really do. But when you're dealing with two candidates or two candidates who have a shot or whoever got into the general, whatever it is, you've got on the one hand a Republican who 8 times out of 10 is on your side or you're on their side versus someone who you're quite literally never on their side. Why in the world would you attack the 8 and 10 if those are your only options? What's the value of doing that from a conservative perspective? It doesn't actually exist. And yet that's what people do too often on our side. And it ends up, by the way, pushing them even further to the middle because they don't want anything to do with you. And then you maybe turn someone who would vote with you 8 out of 10 times, say, okay, I'm going to focus more on the moderates in my district, and they want me to vote this way, and then it becomes 6 out of 10 times. It's just, it's too much, man. Just give it a rest. Other than that, he's a great person, and I think he adds to the conversation in meaningful ways, and we're all better residents because of him, and we're more safe. Does that do enough to
I'm glad cover? He clarified that.
Yeah, I just want to be on the same page. Push the button.
What's trending? Wait, what?
I don't even want to look now at the text messages because people are going to yell at me and I'm going to feel bad. So Sheila Jackson Lee is a dum-dum. There's just no other way to say it. She's not very bright. I love the fact that she yells and is very abusive to staff. Like, I love that. And I'm not making that up. I'm waiting for producer Jackson to feel a little bit more comfortable before I treat him the way that I'd like to. Just because I like the power dynamic of me being over him and being able to, you know, demean him with him feeling trapped. I just, it's a sickness, I suppose. I'm going to Sheila Jackson Lee you at some point. Do you remember that story? She was caught on, she was recorded just berating that poor staff.
Yeah,
number.
I do, yeah.
Oh my God. Good for her. But she's just a dummy. And she said yesterday, I was going to do a segment on the dumbest things people had said yesterday about the eclipse. I was very close to TV's dumbest lawyer, Sonny Hostin. Very close. Who said, what did she say? The cacada was, and the eclipse and earthquakes all combined have influence on one another. And it's because of climate change. Like she pushed everything in the, someone said, it's cacada, dummy. Everything was put into just one conspiracy of dumb. However, I'm going to go with Sheila Jackson Lee because I feel like this is an underappreciated gem. She said this somewhere yesterday during an event for the eclipse.
And sometimes you've heard the word full moon. Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle.
Okay, so this is not even where she's being dumb. Does she not think people know what a full moon is?
Yeah, this is kind of like when Kamala Harris talks to people like they're 5 years old.
Right. It's just, and maybe she was talking to 5 year olds because I don't know where it looked like a school, actually. So maybe it was talking to 5 year olds. But I think even a 5 year old knows what a full moon is, right?
I certainly did.
And by the way, you're just encouraging them to look up, which is going to blind them.
Which is made up mostly of gases.
No, it's not. No, it's not. The moon is not made up mostly of gases. It is a solid. It is composed of rock and metal. That is primarily what we're talking about here. It is not made up primarily of gases.
And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon?
No, it's not. That has literally nothing to do with it at this point, okay? Now, I assume she's confusing this with Jupiter. Maybe she's confusing this with Saturn. Because that's composed mostly of gases. But when it comes to living on the moon, this doesn't have anything to do with gases. It involves the moon's environment. You know, there's like no atmosphere, which is kind of important to have for us humans. I get we're not, you know, Captain Marvel. She could magically, and Thor. They can do whatever it is they want. That's, although I, you know, have the personality of a Thor. We can't do that. So just dial it back a little bit. It's also very, 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 very cold and a whole bunch of radiation you'd have exposure to. Assuming you even had an atmosphere that you can, you know, do things that are pretty essential, like breathe. Oh, my God. She goes on.
The gas is such that we could do that. The sun is a mighty powerful heat.
Okay.
It is almost impossible to go near the sun.
Almost impossible? Now, if I wanted to be very generous and ignore all the context, I could say she's talking about exploration in a general sense. Are devices that can go and do, if I wanted, but the context is very clearly about living on the moon, isn't it? So I'm assuming she's talking about living on the sun, but we can almost make it, but not quite.
I just like that she made a point of telling us that the sun is very hot.
But what does she mean by almost? You know what I mean? Like, it's technically true, right? I mean, it's technically true, but what do you mean by almost? I'm like legitimately curious when she says that. Like, how close do you think we can get? That's my question to her. Like, within a few feet? And we're just not allowed to touch it because it's made of burning fire? Like, right? I feel like it's a big bowl of fire. Didn't you realize? Well, it's a star that's burning. But, okay.
The moon is more manageable.
It's equally unmanageable when it comes to just living on the moon. Just so we're all on the same page.
And you will see in a moment, or not a moment, you'll see in a couple of years that NASA is going back to the moon.
Okay, thanks. Oh, my God. God bless her. God bless her. I'd like to ask her what the gases are that she knows exist on the moon. Aren't you just curious to quiz her?
This story reminds me of when Hank Johnson said he was afraid that Guam was going to capsize.
It's going to tip over if you have too many people on one side of the island. These people are in charge of things. Oh, my God.
We're she's not sending now, our best, Jason.
No, well, she's technically a mayor now, so who cares? Was she Houston? I can't remember what Houston, right?
I didn't even realize she was. I thought she was still in Congress, but
she just got elected to be mayor.
Oh, wow.
You're stuck with her. But Hank Johnson's still in office. Oh my God, that big dolt. 1-800-46, other than that, he's a wonderful person. 1-800-465-8770 for your text. It's the Jason Rand Show.
The Jason Rand Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rand.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rand, is on that.
And you keep on bringing us these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
Well, my next guest says the Seattle Times wasn't too hip to some advertisements, despite the fact that they had already been approved. The Pursuit Northwest, a local church, got chapters in Seattle, Kirkland, Snohomish. The pastor there says they agreed to spend $18,500 on advertising. Obviously, some significant advertisements within the Seattle Times. But 2 days before it was to be printed, the publisher apparently called and said, no, we're not going to do this. So what exactly happened? How did this all go down? Joining me on the line is Pastor Russell Johnson. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason. I appreciate it.
So your intent was to promote Easter Sunday services. You were doing this the week before Easter. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, we had started conversation with the Seattle Times back in February to run what is called a front page Spadia ad, which is like a wrap on the front page, advertising our Easter services. And that ad was to run the Sunday before, which would have been Palm Sunday. And we had been working with the Seattle Times advertising agency and their marketing team for, you know, really about 2 months, and getting things approved and editing the ad to fit their editorial standards and sizing it, and had put quite a bit of time, effort, energy, and money on our side into making that ad work. And we additionally had a signed contract payments that had been agreed to, like you said, for $18,500, which is the most expensive ad space that they offer. And just a few days before that ad was scheduled to run, contracts were signed, proofs were finalized. I got a call while I was actually out of state preaching at another church. I got a call letting me know that the owner, the CEO, Frank Blevin, personally intervened, stepped in at the last minute to say, we are not going to run this ad. We are not going to promote a church. We are not going to allow them to spend their money with our newspaper for a front page Spadia ad.
Wow.
Just simply advertising our upcoming Easter services.
So you believe that this was because you're a church. Is that what you were told?
Yeah, absolutely. We were told that it was essentially a reputational risk for the Seattle Times to allow a church to advertise in this manner on the front page, even though the ad was rather innocuous. Again, just advertising things like service times mm-hmm. and available child care. They said, you know, it didn't really fit with the ethic of the paper. However, the marketing team told me in all of their years of doing advertising for the Seattle Times, this has never once happened where the owner and the CEO personally stepped in at the last minute to cancel a signed contract. And, you know, of course, they tried to offer us like a consolation prize, like, well, we could maybe put an ad for you like on another page or maybe on the back page of the newspaper. But it kind of felt like to me like, well, you can't sit at the front of the bus. So just sit at the back of the bus and be happy with it, because at least you're still on the bus. And I was mm-hmm. like, no, we've already have a signed contract. What are you talking about? This is what we've been working on for 2 months. And at the 11th hour, you guys are going to cancel? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And this idea that they wouldn't run this by anyone who might be sensitive at the start is kind of a head scratcher, because obviously if they're giving you a consolation by saying, oh, we'll put it somewhere else in the newspaper in a less notable position, well, they'll still take your money. They'll still advertise a church. They just don't want it to be at the front of the page, I guess, which just sends an odd message to me.
Well, yeah. And I mean, as you know, print media in many ways is a kind of a dying avenue mm-hmm. and they are dependent on ad dollars. And so, you know, and they gave us no discounts, you know, for this ad space. We paid full market rate. There's no nonprofit discount. And, you know, we were more than happy to do that. And to have them pull the rug out from under us, you know, the context that was given to me was that, you know, the owner of the newspaper is not ever personally invested or involved in any type of decision on what type of ads they run. They already have a multi-page document that outlines what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say, the font, the size of the font, the placement. And we had worked with their team to make sure that our ad complied with every finite detail of their yep. marketing framework. And to have, you know, Frank get involved at the last minute and say, no, we're actually not going to allow a church to advertise their Easter services when they take ad dollars from everybody else to run ads supporting every other issue. For a church to advertise its Easter times and it's too much of a risk for the Times to run it, I thought to myself, you know, there is a reason places like the Seattle Times are on a fast road towards insolvency, and this is one of them.
Well, it's so curious because I remember last election cycle, I believe it was, where you had, at least on the website, an entire homepage takeover by the teachers unions promoting something. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but I remember some folks in the media call this out and saying, well, don't you cover them in the news? This seems a little bit odd. So in that circumstance, it seemed to be okay. But when it comes to a church, it doesn't. We're talking with Pastor Russell Johnson of the Pursuit Northwest, talking about the Seattle Times at the last minute. He says canceled their advertisement by $18,500, which you told me it was refunded, of course, that they're not hanging on to the money. But this came at a bit of a shock to you, and it sounds like it came as a shock to the marketing specialist. You forwarded me some of the email exchanges between everyone. You showed me the contract. We've reached out to the Seattle Times for comment. I have not yet heard back. If I do, I'll certainly read their statement or post it on our website. But I mean, what was the lesson from all of this, other than maybe skip out on Seattle Times and advertise on KTTH?
Yeah, exactly. No, we need to do that. Yeah, you know, for me, and we have followed up with our lawyers as well. I mean, the reality is yeah, I'm a free market guy, and Seattle Times is a privately owned entity, and I support business owners being able to make decisions about, you know, how their businesses are run. But the reality is that their decision to cancel our, you know, multi-$1,000 signed contract at the last minute is, you know, borderline very close to viewpoint discrimination. Because the reality is, like you mentioned, Jason, you know, the Seattle Times is, of course, more than willing to take money to advance whatever ideological angle that they may have, even though on a regular basis they are just about on the wrong side of every issue that you know, common sense conservatives would stand for. But it's not like we were asking to advertise in a way or to advertise something that was so outside the framework of what the Seattle Times has willingly done in the past. And so, you know, I really do feel like there's an element of viewpoint discrimination that is at play. And, you know, it doesn't take into account, yeah, of course, they refunded the money from the contract, but it doesn't take into account the thousands of dollars that we had already spent in the designing of this ad leading up to this moment. And so, yeah, I mean, I think for you, the lesson that I'm learning and continuing to learn being in this region, having a large church in this region, trying to do our best to advance the gospel, is that, you know, we are constantly and continually surrounded by people who are not just antithetical to the message of Scripture, but they are actively opposed to it. And they go out of their way to make it exceedingly difficult and to be, you know, roadblocks to other organizations that, you know, simply want to advertise things like service times that are coming up on Easter. And so, you know, we're going to continue to use discretion, you know, in the future. But, you know, we've spent a lot of money on advertising and billboards and radio and TV and commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, well, one of the things that we do is we saturate the media environment and let people know about what God is doing in this region. And so for an organization that's entirely dependent on ad dollars to do a move like this is not only incredibly stupid, but it is, you know, borderline viewpoint discrimination. And I think is an unfortunate additional blemish on the Seattle Times record as, you know, an ever-growing progressive publication.
As a private company, just legally speaking, viewpoint discrimination doesn't sound valid, again, legally speaking, because I think that they would be able to do this. However, you bring up a very important point here. You guys spent a whole lot of money creating the ads because you were working in good faith with someone else who presumably was working in good faith, only to have the rug pulled out from under everyone, it sounds like. Are you considering a lawsuit to recuperate the costs?
Yeah, you know, we're talking with our lawyers about it right now, but the reality is that the Seattle Times advertising placements are likely considered under Washington state law a place of public accommodation, which would fall under the non-discrimination clauses. So when they publish similar ads by other groups but instead decline ours, it is arguably, you know, in one sense, religious discrimination. But yeah, I mean, I think at a bare minimum, the Seattle Times owes us for the amount of time, energy, and effort that we put in to creating an ad that had already been approved by virtue of signed contract. And yeah, so for us, I mean, I think all things being fair, the Times does owe us that. You know, whether or not they would ever be willing to admit that and pay up is probably a long shot. But yeah, I mean, I think it's the unfortunate reality of the market that we live in, which is dominated by people who are more or less militantly opposed to any type of ideology that does not fit neatly within the progressive framework.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to me the way religious organizations, any churches, any religious or even spiritual group gets treated here in especially in Seattle. I mean, look, I'm Jewish. You and I don't share the same faith, but there's certainly some overlap in what we believe in. And the idea that just because you and I might not see eye to eye on everything means, oh, we better shun them from having anything to do with our radio station. And how dare he have a different viewpoint? I'm not even going to put him on. That just seems very odd to me. So I'm sorry you're going through this. I can't say that I'm terribly surprised, I suppose. And again, we're giving full benefit. I will give benefit of the doubt. Maybe there's some amazing reason that this should have been caught ahead of time, and the Seattle Times will provide a statement that gives us some context to this. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, though, because it sounds pretty straightforward to me. Again, thank you so much for coming on. We've been talking with Pastor Russell Johnson of The Pursuit Northwest. The website is thepursuitnw.com. Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And again, we've got the story up right now, ktth.com. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Back with some quick hits after this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
Well, there was another embarrassing demonstration today out in D.C. this time of anti-Semites who want to disrupt in order to send a message that Israel shouldn't exist and you better change your tune. It's a rather offensive and ridiculous and flat out dangerous idea. But hey, it is what it is. We unfortunately have to live with these people. That's the unfortunate reality. So what ended up happening today was about 50 people who definitely are not practicing what they preach. They disrupted the Senate cafeteria. They shut it down. And they chanted a rather weird and silly slogan, which is, I'm not even making this one, Senate can't eat until Gaza eats. Oh, okay.
Children are starving in Gaza.
Oh, they're singing.
Children are starving in Gaza.
And how sad is this? Because I recognize one of the voices. She's the, I can't remember her name, but she's the founder of, or one of the leaders of Code Pink. She does this all the time. That one prominent female voice that you hear there, that is the woman from Code Pink.
People are dying in Gaza.
It's not even catchy.
And the occupation and the war. And the occupation.
It sounds like they just learned the lyrics and this is their first practice as a group. And it goes on and oh my God. Now these, just looking at the photos, and Fox News says the same thing. These are the folks who interrupted the testimony from Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin earlier this morning. He, of course, was there to talk about not just the war against Gaza or war against Hamas, of course, but this was an issue that came up. And Senator Tom Cotton actually asked what would be deemed a controversial question. It's not really a controversial question, and the answer wasn't controversial unless you don't like Jews.
I want to address what the protesters raised earlier. Is Israel committing genocide in Gaza?
Senator Cotton, we don't have any evidence of genocide being created.
So that's a no. Israel's not committing genocide in Gaza.
We don't have evidence of that, to
Thank
my
you.
Knowledge.
Yeah,
so there's no evidence of genocide. Now, what some people who act out in bad faith will say is, we'll then explain all of the innocent civilians who are dying. I can explain it really easily. They're in war zones. And the war would not be happening right now if Hamas did not do that. Did not attack on October 7th, did not take all those hostages, didn't hang on to those hostages, didn't go into densely populated areas where they know that civilians will end up being killed. They do that because they don't care about the Palestinian lives. They care about using them, claiming them as martyrs, claiming that Israel is striking innocent civilians needlessly, when of course that's not what's happening. Now, we talked yesterday about the mistake that was made. We talked about that. And they own that mistake. They own it. And they owned it from the beginning, saying this should not have happened. We're going to find out immediately what did happen. And not only did they find out immediately, they put out the results very quickly in ways we would never see that kind of speed here in the United States even. Now, this is so clearly orchestrated using Hamas talking points. There's no doubt about it. They feel this momentum on their side because, and by the way, I think they do have momentum on their side. You've got enough Democrats who are starting to change their tune pretty substantially. And it's not just the progressive wing. You even have Chuck Schumer shamefully getting involved because he thinks it's going to help Biden stay in office, so he's going to sell out Israel. It's pretty disgusting. But you've got others who are not going to go along with this, to their credit. John Fetterman has been very much pro-Israel. This is a guy who, when he ran, all of us assumed, based on his positions previously, and frankly how he dresses, that he was going to be this hardcore progressive. Turns out we were wrong. I'm glad we were wrong. Now, he's still progressive on some issues, no doubt, and he's still a Democrat, so we're going to disagree more than we agree. But on this issue, he spoke out even over the weekend on squatters' rights, just ripping into that. I mean, we have more in common, I think, than folks want to realize. And for Pennsylvania, that almost guarantees that he's going to stay in power for a while. And, you know, I'd rather have a reasonable Democrat than an unreasonable progressive if we're not going to be able to get a Republican there. Now, obviously, I would replace him in a heartbeat if we had a Republican who could win. But if a Republican doesn't win, I'd rather him than any of the other crazies, especially on these issues that matter the most to me. Now, the Wall Street Journal just put out an editorial today as well. They're jumping into this, rightfully so. And they're going after Nancy Pelosi and some of the other Democrats for signing a letter telling Joe Biden to stop transferring weapons to Israel. She, too, is selling out Israel. She represents San Francisco. They're filled with anti-Semites. Although I was proud to see how many people showed up to a pro-Israel rally when I was there last October. And this was like a week after there was this massive anti-Israel rally. So the pro-Israel folks, they matched it. And I thought that that was pretty cool. But they wrote in their editorial, the Wall Street Journal, denying weapons to an ally in the middle of a war is the definition of betrayal. They labeled Pelosi a sunshine ally. Now, this is truly hypocritical, of course, because you've got, at the same time that they're saying hold off on weapons to Israel, they're saying if you hold up on any foreign aid to Ukraine, they're not only going to lose the war, but democracy will be lost. But when it comes to Israel, they don't have those same views. Again, one country filled with Jews, the other one not. One country going up against Putin, who Democrats believe to be the most evil person on the planet, versus going up against Hamas, which too many Democrats believe are freedom fighters. Now, beyond that, and I'm so glad that the editorial pointed this out. In fact, I'm just going to read to you the sentence. They ignore the Hellfire missile attack that killed 7 children as the U.S. sought to avenge the deaths of 13 Americans in Kabul as Mr. Biden pulled U.S. forces from Afghanistan in 2021. Israel has a history of accountability for such mistakes. And so they're calling this out as massively hypocritical, and that's precisely what it is. Massively hypocritical. And it's not going to end. Yet today, Benjamin Netanyahu coming out and setting a date for the so-called Rafah offensive. He's not showing any indication that he's not going to commit ground troops in Rafah. And again, he shouldn't back down from that. This all could end right this moment if Hamas gave up hostages and gave up themselves. They are choosing not to do that. That is a choice that they know is going to lead to bloodshed of innocents. They do not care. That's how much they hate Jews. They're willing to give up the lives of some civilians that they don't even care for to begin with. And that kind of hate is dangerous. That kind of hate is dangerous. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Don't forget, we get a podcast every single day. In addition to this show, we do a separate show. It's called The Leftovers. You can only get it if you are a podcast subscriber. Just head on over to ktth.com, or, of course, you can go wherever it is you get your podcasts. Search Jason Rant Show. Hit the little subscribe button. While you're at it, give me a 5-star review. This is The Jason Rant Show.